25 minutes after 11 o'clock, our Mellow Joy Coffee Time is welcome back to the show, Richard Hebert, Hebert's Garden Center. How you doing, sir?
Hey, Jeff. Good morning to you.
Appreciate the breakfast again. I stopped at our locally owned and operated McDonald's restaurants. I love those breakfast burritos.
Yeah, real simple, easy to eat.
Yeah. Especially when I was on the road and you order a sack of those and, yeah, just
easy.
Meat.
Right.
Love them. Anyway, appreciated it.
Good.
So you have brought in some color.
Well, yeah, I mean, again, this is the time of year with peak season right now. Everybody's getting out in the yard and planting, getting it done before, in theory, it gets too hot, which is really close. But, you know, still plenty of time to plant. You just want to try to get it done. Certainly the weeding and all that other stuff, you need to hopefully have knocked that out and get it planted. But I thought I'd talk about a few different things. The big one I want to talk about is caladiums, and I bought a plant right here. You know, caladiums are the little, some people call them elephant ears, which is incorrect, but it's the ones that have different color leaves.
Is there an elephant ear like what you see along the bayou sometimes?
That's right. Yeah. That's just a big green elephant ear, but this is caladiums, which has different color leaves, generally get around 18 to 24 inches tall. You see them a lot under trees in the shade, but there are certain varieties that you can grow from into the sun from a bulb. But anyway, I thought we had talked about it a few weeks ago, but this is a caladium bulb, and this is the caladium plant. And, you know, the bulb doesn't look like much, right?
No.
Just a little brown rhizome, I guess, tuber. And however, the neat thing about caladium is
it looks like something you wouldn't want to pick up.
<That's>
you know?
Right. Yeah, it kind of does. I know what you're saying there. But the good thing about caladiums is that for people who procrastinate and want to get a, you know, kind of when the spring is here, it's time to go, caladiums are much better planted later than sooner. And the reason is because they will not come up, the bulb itself will not come up in a cold soil. So if you plant them in the middle of March, it's not going to come up till the ground warms up no matter what you do.
And do you risk anything?
Yeah, you do risk that if cold temperatures and wet weather will cause them to kind of rot in the ground. So there's really no reason to plant early. And so I guess what I'm trying to say is that it's not too late. You can plant these now, and they will come up fast. Caladiums are graded. You know, you got number twos, which is the smallest, number one, a little bit bigger, jumbo, a little bit bigger, and then mammoth, which is the biggest. But anyway, what I brought into the show today is a jumbo, which is about, I guess, 2 inches across, roughly. And so
the bigger the bulb, the bigger the plant you can expect?
Well, the bigger the bulb, the more leaves you're going to have.
Okay.
So it goes by the variety. And that's another misnomer is that, you know, you plant a mammoth bulb, you're going to get these huge, tall plants. No, basically you get a larger bulb, so you get more sprouts. And the growers, I bought in for Jeff, and this is a 4-inch plant. The growers will put a number 2 bulb in there. And so this is a jumbo bulb. And the basic difference is that this one has 3 times as many bulbs as this plant does.
Okay.
It's going to have 3 times as many leaves as this plant does. So this is one of those cases
Is that all the leaves that we're going to see on that one?
That's it.
Okay.
That's it. Whereas this one's going to have this plus 2 more.
So when you buy it in that state, you pretty much know what you're getting.
Exactly. You know what you're getting. And this one, you just got to buy it. There's different colors. And so caladiums come in pinks, whites, reds, and variations thereof. And there are different heights also. Some will only get 12 inches tall. Some will get 18 inches tall. And some will get 24 inches tall. So you want to kind of know what you're doing. But it's a great border plant. Again, a great shade plant. You can use this as a backdrop and put seasonal color in front of it. Or you can use it as a perimeter border plant. Just want to be careful what you put behind it. You want to make sure it gets taller than, you know, 18 to 24 inches, or you can go with the shorter ones that get 12 inches. But either way, you can plant the bulbs now. You'll cover them, you know, an inch or two. Some people are worried, so what's the top and what's the bottom? You know, they got these little hairy fiber things. That's the bottom. But it's not that critical. It just takes a little bit longer for them to come up if you do happen to plant it upside down. And some will actually take a knife and cut the stem off the top of the bulb and maybe make a little nodule. And so instead of getting one shoot, you'll get 3 shoots. kind of interesting. Most people don't do that, but that's kind of a side note. So anyway, Caladium is a very, very popular plant, getting much harder to get. Last year, for the first time in 30 or 40 years, was the first time we did not get any Caladium bulbs at all, and that's because they come out of South Florida or mid-Florida, and they... And we had, remember, they had that two hurricanes that went down there last year, and they just basically rotted. And it's just getting a commodity that's getting tougher and tougher to find. And but this year we were able to get them, and again, it's not too late to get those planted in the ground. Cover them a couple inches deep. Good drainage is important. If you have some bone meal, throw a little bone meal in there with it. That'll help those tubers get bigger and bigger. At the end of the season, which is generally, depending on when they planted and depending on temperatures, middle to end of October or November is when these leaves will start to die back and go dormant. So there's two options on that when the plant goes dormant. You can actually harvest these bulbs and store them in a warm box with some peat moss or vermiculite separating them, but they need to be, can't put them in the garage. They don't like cold temperatures.
Why separate?
The reason you separate them is because if one of them maybe has a bit too much moisture in it and it starts to rot, it'll only rot one bulb. But if you have them just all bunched together, then that rotting will actually help. You're gonna end up rotting a lot more bulbs. So it also helps pull some moisture out when you pack them in vermiculite or peat moss, kind of pull some moisture out of the bulb. And that's why you cannot harvest these things. Say, oh, well, I'm not going to be in town end of October, so I'm going to harvest them early October when they're still green and still showing the leaves. If you do that, there's too much moisture in these bulbs.
Okay.
And so then there's a really good chance of them rotting. So if you just let them die back naturally, and then you harvest them, and then you put them in a box, air, you can't put them in a plastic bag. They need to breathe. It's a live entity. So what you do is, and the separation is to help draw moisture out of the bulb and to keep the bulb separate, and just store them in a warm spot. You know, it doesn't have to be, you know, hot. Just in, you know, room temperature is fine, and but you don't want to put them in the garage.
Any other preparation? Getting dirt off them, or
not really? Some people will actually wash them off. I don't recommend it because of the moisture issue. Just when you harvest them, hopefully it's dry, and usually is. And the only other thing would be is that if you don't harvest them, if the ground drains properly, you probably won't lose them. But I guess the biggest difference is that, see, this is a jumbo bulb, which, again, was about 2 inches in diameter. The bulbs, if you harvest them and treat them right, give them bone meal, you know, once or twice during the growing season, the bulbs will actually get bigger and bigger every year, which means more sprouts.
Interesting.
If you leave them in the ground, as a rule, they'll get smaller because they got that cold temperature. So they certainly won't get any bigger and potentially will get smaller. So it is beneficial to harvest them. I get it. Easier said than done, but that's one of the benefits. About another plant that is kind of underutilized, but people will start seeing blooming in the landscape shortly, if not now. This one's called Esperanza, and I guess this has a little tubular flower, about an inch long.
It stays tubular; it doesn't widen out or anything.
No, it's pretty much tubular, but it's going to be several flowers. I guess the tube is about an inch long. And hummingbirds like it.
I was going to say, they probably attract certain species. You know.
Exactly. And this is a yellow flower, which is the most common, but they also come in reds and oranges now. But the Esperanza will get around 4 to 5 feet tall. It's really a bush more than anything. Now, really cold temperatures have played havoc on them. But if we ever get some normal winters, they actually overwintered very well many, many years. But the last few years where we get that 1 week of, you know, low 20s, they've had issues. However, they grow fast, so you can replant it, and they'll get 4 or 5 feet this growing season. Toward the end of summer, they'll be 4 or 5 feet tall. And they like the sun, like the heat, will bloom from late spring all summer into the fall. So if you're looking for something different, that will give you some height, it's a good one. Just make sure you're getting more sun than shade for them to do well. And a real popular plant that does well. Talking a little bit about, let's see, this one. This one came out in the paper. I think it was the Daily Iberian. I'm not sure. But this is a Zinnia, and the one they talked about is called Zesty, which LSU did some trials, so it's a proven winter plant, I think they call it, and it does real well. The one I brought is Profusion. We do get Zesty, but when, a lot of times the growers have a little need a little catching up time with some of the newer varieties. But Profusion is a second cousin to Zesty in the sense that it only gets about 12 to 15 inches tall, short. It performs very, very well. Some people had trouble with the older zinnias. The zinnias from years ago would generally get about, you know, 2 feet tall. They were kind of cut flowers, but you kind of had to pinch them back. They were more susceptible to wind and some other issues, whereas this Profusion will only get 12 inches tall, but it put out a bunch of flowers, smaller, but because the flowers are more abundant, they actually perform very, very well. So second cousin to Zesty. I think the growers will have some more Zesties, but if you in a panic and you want to plant this weekend, don't hesitate to do the Profusion Zinnia. It performs very, very well. Switching now to a little bit more color. I just bought a few things that I thought the listeners might be interested in. But a lot of people do containers now, Jeff. So, you know, people don't do a lot of as much as these big areas of planting, especially when it comes to bedding plants. And containers are a great way to plant showy color and that can be seen because they're elevated. And I bought these three plants only because these are what they call spillers or trailers, and these will actually hang out the plant. And kind of unique and different. This first one I bought is, you can see the flower. It looks like a fan.
Okay,
and,
yeah, yeah.
And they call it fan flower. And it does really good. It comes in 3 to 4 different colors, pink, purple, white, and blue. And they will actually hang. So if you look at a spiller that comes out of the pot, needs more sun than shade, fan flower is a good one.
You say spill, it'll go over a good over, hanging plant?
A good hanging plant. And so you can put them in a hanging basket. Actually, we got a bunch of them in just fan flowers in hanging baskets. Or you can put it as assortment of other plants, uprights, and spillers throughout. But fan flower is a good one you want to check out, does well. This other one is called Golden Globe, Lismachia, and it makes a very pronounced yellow flower. About a half inch in diameter, but it'll put out a bunch, and that will also spill over the pot. And a real showy, you know, yellow and white are two good showy colors that stand out. And but Golden Globe does well. I like the leaves. You can actually plant this one in the ground, and man, it can take some cold weather and stay green. So if you're looking for a sun ground cover that stays very low, it would almost hug the ground, maybe get 2 inches tall. And just spread. It's a good one. But utilize.
Is that the one closest to you?
Oh, I'm
the
sorry.
Box?
It's this one right here.
It is that one. Okay.
Yeah, making the yellow flower. But this one right here, it's called Creeping Jenny. It basically makes just the leaves. And I guess I'm saying this because leaf color, amongst other colors, is really, really good. And this has kind of a light lime green, mm-hmm. a small leaf to it that'll trail and hang out of the pot. So even though it's not going to flower, it does give you color, especially if you contrast it with maybe the, you know, a red pot or a blue pot or something like that.
I'm going to say maybe it wasn't getting enough light, but that is the
the actual color. It's not sick. And but you know, leaf color is important. You know, we talk about that with the caladiums and coleus, and there's many plants that will give you leaf color that some people will shy away from, but you know, try not to. If you interdisperse it with other color, it actually helps things stand out. And this Creeping Jenny performs extremely well. They will go in full sun or full shade and just waver and hang out. The other big one I get is that Sweet Potato Vine, which is another really good spiller with leaf color. The biggest issue with Sweet Potato Vine is very aggressive. So it will grow.
That was one of the things I liked about it.
And that's right. In the right situation, it's good. But, you know, I always tell people, they say, man, the thing was, you know, it crawled out of the pot and was 4 feet on the ground. I said, well, just take a pair of scissors and cut it. You know, it doesn't hurt it at all. It just goes. I mean, but you do have to cut it. You have to cut it once a week. Once we get into the prime season, they grow that rapidly. But again, that's another good spiller. There's several other ones like Purslane, Portulaca, and the only big one I did not bring in is Trailing Vinca, which is just a good, most people know Vinca, And again, that's one of those heat-tolerant plants, heat vinco or periwinkle. But there's also one trailing now that actually will either grow as a ground cover or spill out of the pot that people like and performs good. So you have a lot of options on spillers that will perform very, very well. And all of these I talked about will grow all summer long and take the heat. You know, as we get into the growing season and temperatures rise, you just have to watch the watering. And usually in pots, it becomes almost an everyday task, and you just got to deal with that. Switching now, Jeff, to vegetables. And, boy, I tell you what, this has been a great vegetable year so far, Jeff. You know, last year was a rough one. And the reason last year was so tough was that we got a slight freeze, but just enough to cause major issues at the middle of March. I don't know if it's March 15th, March 16th, and boom, anybody that started early had problems. You know, a frost, people can prepare for frost by, you know, either getting up early right before sun up and hosing the frost off the leaves, or physically covering it with a box or whatever. But last year it froze, and even though you covered it, even though it only got to 32 for a few days, it's all tender vegetation. It really wreaked havoc on the vegetable garden. However, the people who said, well, it ain't going to happen twice, were smart, because this year, I mean, I had one person come in and said they planted the middle of February and they were harvesting tomatoes a week ago. And you know, so people have a lot of vegetables on it. It was hard with certain things like cucumbers and squash and okra. Those are all just can't take just if you even think about getting cold, they don't like it. But the tomatoes and the peppers and the eggplants really did well. So an early start is going to pay big dividends right now because, again, the people who started early have the fruit on the vine. They've already set. They're going to make a good early crop before temperatures get really, really hot. And you also have a much more established plant so that the root system is going to be able to tolerate drying out and just the heat in general. So from that standpoint, very good. We're starting to see a little influx of insect issues and fungus issues. Just kind of remember when it comes to the rain we got last Saturday, was it, Jeff, or Sunday? It rained all day. Or was it this week? It was Monday, huh?
Yeah, Monday morning.
Monday morning. Okay, so that's going to promote fungus issues.
3 inches in some areas.
That's right. So that's going to promote fungus issues, and even just this misting on these leaves will. So kind of get ready or do preventive maintenance on that and spray fungicides on it. The other issue is with the tomatoes and the peppers when we have this fluctuation in moisture where we go from – it was really dry before that rain Monday, and then we get a lot of rain. That will cause blossom end rot, and that's where the fruit, especially on tomatoes, will turn black on the bottom. And everybody brings them in and says – what's this fungus? And the frustrating thing about it, it's easily preventable. And so there are sprays that you can actually spray on the leaves. And I'm showing Jeff this ready-to-use spray. And you just spray it on the leaves. That will prevent it. And I would do that as a preventative now so you don't lose a large percentage of your first crop of tomatoes and or peppers, but especially the tomatoes is where the issue at is. You also see it on squash, too, but so that fluctuation in moisture. So trying to keep the moisture consistent will help reduce it. And all that is caused by a lack of calcium, which basically means that the plant was unable, either the calcium was not available in the soil or the plant was unable to pick it up because it was either too dry or too wet. So even though you say, oh, I limed it, so there should be plenty of calcium in the soil, that's true. But because either the soil was really, really wet or really, really dry, it was unable to take that calcium out of the ground and bring it to the fruit, and that's when you apply it to the leaves, and so it's absorbed to the leaves instead. So I would do a spraying of that on if you have your tomatoes, you know, of any size, even though they're green. I would spray it so you don't lose a percentage of them. And it's totally natural. It's calcium chloride, so you can spray it and eat the same day. It's not a synthetic insecticide or something
right.
So just liquid calcium that you're spraying on there, and it works real good. It'll prevent it completely. Once you start to have it, then you'll have to spray at least twice to stop it. But anyway, it's something very normal, and then we will definitely see it. The other one that we're going to watch for, we haven't seen much of it yet, is the flowers not setting the fruit. And that's the benefit of planting early, is that the first initial flower set, temperatures were mild. And so they set the fruit, no problem. Now they starting next week, we're going to start to see temperatures get into the upper 80s mm-hmm. and 90s. And that's when we might start to see the blossom set become an issue. No need to panic, but you can start spraying toward the middle and end of next week, this blossom set, and that will help those flowers set fruit. Another issue when it comes to fruit set is cucumbers. People calling saying, oh, my cucumbers, none of the flowers are setting the cucumbers. What's going on? And that is simply because cucumbers and squash, the first week or two, will just put out male flowers, and so there's nothing to pollinate. So that's a normal situation where for the first couple of weeks you will see that. And then they'll come out with the female flowers, and they'll pollinate, then they'll start setting. So I think that's all. That's just kind of characteristic of the plants. But we should start to see these start to set shortly if they've been in bloom for a couple of weeks. And so all that's performed well. The other big insect issue has been aphids. And aphids, Jeff, used to be the easiest insect to control. Easy. You used to malify them, but they've built up resistance to different chemicals. So,
it seems amazing to me because the life cycle of these bugs is not long.
But I think that's why. I think that's why, because they're able to build that resistance because they cycle out so fast that generation, we think of how many generations they may go through in a spring, is probably a lot. So, it doesn't happen in 1 year, but over the last 40 years, they have been able to build up resistance. So, we have a lot of things labeled for it, and so, we're trying to see which ones work, but it's not as easy to control as it used to be, which is amazing to me, but I think that's why, is because they cycle out so fast. And so their generations are build up immunities very, very fast.
The ones that survive, I guess.
Yeah. So maybe out of 10,000, you have 200 that survive, and so that 200 makes another 10,000, and then it just, that's how it works. And so we're kind of playing a trial and see. It's one thing about being in business; you can kind of begin to see what works and what's not. But you also got to factor in, you can't just spray anything on vegetables. So, but anyway. We're trying a few different chemicals, but you want to stay ahead of that one. And have not seen too much, any issues of the stink bug, which can be a major problem. But early season aphids, which is kind of normal, but earlier than normal, and that was simply because we had a relatively mild winter. After that first week of January, it got cold. It was really warm, and so the insect population is going to be high this year, and so. Kind of stay ahead of that, and I think that that will be fine. But man, the initial results in terms of the people saying the vegetable crop is going to be really, really good. When it comes to the flowers, Jeff, the snapdragons and all those fall plants have really hung on, and we start to see a decline last week, and it was because it was getting hot and it was getting dry. But we got that rain Monday, and that kind of revived them. So. And again, people panic and say, man, no, I'm going to take these beautiful snaps out because, y'all are going to run out of plants. No, that's not true. So what will happen is that the plant selection will become a little bit less. However, the plants that are going to take the heat is what you're going to have available, which really what you want to plant.
Yeah.
And so the availability of the plants will be there, will be strong. It's just that the varieties will be less. However, the good news is that the ones that are going to be here are the ones that are going to take that summer heat and be able to perform very, very well, which is really good. Switching now to the lawns, Jeff. Again, last year was a rough year for lawns, and it's showing this spring. We're seeing a lot of weed issues. We're seeing a lot of thatch issues. We're just seeing a lot of dying vegetation. And so we're saying we finally, over the last 2 or 3 weeks, people have been fertilizing, which what we'd recommend. And so you want to continue to do that. Normally, we would say once a year, Jeff, fertilize the grass and just let it maintain. This year is going to be a different one. You're going to want to do it I mean, at least three times during the growing season. You could do it more than that to get that grass to start to thicken up and get aggressive again. And so if it's a normal summer, you know, I tell people, when's my – okay, I'm going to do it now. When do you want to do it? I say 4 to 8 weeks, you do it again. And just wait till we get a good rain before you do it. I can water. It's not enough. You know, it gets too hot. And like last year, it just wasn't enough. You couldn't water enough to – it was just so hot and so dry. So you never want to fertilize in a drought even though you can water. But just wait till we get a good rain. So if it's a normal situation and say, hey, you need your second fertilization, it's supposed to be June 1st, and we don't get any good rain till middle of June, that's fine. But just be prepared to do it then. And I think that's it. So if we have a normal summer, I think we'll be okay and get that grass nice and thickened up. We just need a normal summer.
Gotcha. Anything else before we let you go?
Jeff, I think that's it.
We'll look forward to the next time. And, again, thanks for breakfast today.
Okay, Jeff.